Welcome to The Art of the Impossible, a podcast that explores how the design and manufacturing industry can leverage technology, processes, and people to make the impossible possible. I'm Asif Mogul, Director of Market and Industry Development at Autodesk, and each week I'll be joined by industry experts to share the challenges they face and what they're doing to overcome them. From smart products, mass customization, digitization, supply chain, and the convergence of once diverse industries, this podcast is for business leaders who are interested in making things happen. You can subscribe by following us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So welcome to this episode of The Art of the Impossible. One of the most consistent comments that comes up when we discuss digital transformation with all of our guests has been how technology is a part of it, but an equal and you might argue a bigger part of it is the change management process. And that's really what we're going to focus on today. So a lot of people would say, digital transformation is about productivity, profitability, and efficiency, which is true, but you can never achieve those things unless you have a really good change management process. And so we've got a really interesting story today from our guest who's going to really help us understand their experience of how they manage that transformation inside the business. So delighted to welcome our guest today, Jude McCann, who's the Innovation Manager at Rathbane Group. So Jude, welcome to the episode.
Thank you, Isaac.
Great. So let's kick off by, could you just help us understand a little bit more about Rathbane Group? I know you've got many subsidiaries and you've got a very specific role in it. Could you just kind of help clarify, what is Rathbane Group about? What's your role in the company?
Rathbane Group is a parent company over three trade and contracting businesses, MTM Marine, Mavon, and Topgloss. All three companies are in the construction industry, doing specialized projects. And I guess our purpose is to deliver luxury spaces for each and every one of us to enjoy over a period of time. Maybe we work for main contractors, but obviously we're developing these spaces, luxury environments for everyone to enjoy in their holidays and their vacations and their workplace. So that's our group and that's what we're about.
Sorry, it sounds fantastic. So just give us a sense of where your luxury environments might turn up in terms of our lives. And when we're talking about luxury boats, yachts, caravans, where would we see some of your work and your projects?
A lot of our projects around hotel and retail spaces in London, especially with Topgloss and Mavon's trading work, and then with MGM Marine and with Mavon, you'll see. If you've been on a cruise ship, you'll have likely been in an environment that we have delivered for you. So while you're enjoying your vacation, you're maybe drinking at a nice bar and you're sitting, oh, this bar is lovely. There's a fair chance that we have been there and had an input on that.
Well, I've never been on a cruise, but if I ever go on one or next time I'm in a luxury hotel, I'll check around and go, this could be the Rathbane Group work here. So, Jude, what's your role inside the organization? Because it sounds like quite a diverse set of projects you manage, but what's your specific role?
Yeah, well, I came out of an operational role within one of the trading businesses, Asif, and I guess with my experience of how the company's operated and to touch in the contract and where things are going, I was challenged with looking at emerging technology and how it can influence how we can deliver a better service to our customers. Better control on programming, better control on delivery of materials, better on-site management, efficiencies, all of the things we mentioned at the beginning.
So there's a sense of, part of your responsibility is to keep that, I guess, continuous improvement, culture and ethic, alive and kicking inside the business. Would you say that's correct?
Yes. I would go a step further and to challenge the business to keep pushing on and moving, be hungry to improve rather than, amble along. Really to push on and look at what's impossible and then can we make it possible?
So, Jude, we've spoke before and you very kindly shared us the story of how you implemented a very specific bit of like digital technology in the business, which is around 3D. And so, you know, at the beginning of the episode, we said we're not really going to talk about tech. But what I'm really interested to understand is, what was the catalyst that led you to think, you know what, we need to implement some kind of new technology into the business? What was happening in your market or your industry or around you that brought you to that decision?
I guess in the business, we were badly affected by the pandemic. We do a lot of work in the cruise industry. And as we all know, cruise ships stood pretty much dormant for 18 months to 2 years there. Our owner was very resilient in that time. You know, we had scaled the business and got to a very good operating level at the time with great turnover and getting great results. But there was a lot of pain to get to there. So he took the option at that time to say, right, what can we do here so that when the business recovers and grows back into the force that it was, that we're much smarter, more agile business going forward. So I guess we had a vision of a digital platform that could carry all of our technology stack, if you want. And we looked at, we very much have set out on the goal to build building blocks piece by taking software vendors together and then integrating and putting them together with trying to use their technology stack for what it's good at and moving forward. So I guess, as if we're with a vision and a strategy to get to one place, the 2D to 3D piece was a critical building block in that infrastructure to get us to where we needed to go. And that's what really drove us in the direction of going to that 3D infrastructure. We recognized fairly rapidly that the data that we can embed within our design in a 2D environment just wasn't feasible. We can embed a much richer data set within the 3D environment, and that's what we're striving towards.
You mentioned the P word there, actually, Jude. You mentioned the word platform, and that's actually a word that I think the technology industry is kind of littered with at the moment. Everyone's talking about a platform. I'd really love to understand, when you talk about platform, what is your definition of a platform in the context of your business? What is it? What could platform thinking enable you to do?
Well, platform thinking enables us to understand, you know, the impact of changes at various positions through different departments. It breaks down the silos and really allows a fully integrated environment where the effect of a designer doing something here has this impact on production to make something, has this impact on the delivery schedule to get it out to safe, to get it placed in position. So it's really that communication band wrapped around everything, and then fundamentally, as always, there'll be the cost controls and everything wrapped around that, servicing it underneath through our ERP system, which would have been another big step we took around that time as well.
That's great. I think it's a really interesting to hear so many different people's perspectives around platform, but you mentioned a word there. It's this integrated environment, and then it seems as if that's the key goal that people are looking to get to, is if you have this integrated environment, you almost get a sense of, like, in real time, we see the impacts of decisions showing up, and then we could just make much better decisions as a business about, yeah, let's go down this route, or let's go down that route, or actually let's go forwards or backwards. So I really love the integrated environment sort of comment you made there.
That environment allows us to very quickly communicate with each other and to get to decisions much more quickly, to allow, you know, in a contract and trading business, if you delay on decision making, ultimately what you end up happening is panic buying at somewhere along the journey, or catching delays and forcing labor into holes to try to bring back yourself to program and things. So the reality is, the sooner we can make the decision making, make it clear and share the decision with everybody, the more likely we can keep control of the cost and keep on program and deliver to the satisfaction of our customer.
That's so important. Yeah, great insight there. Thank you, Jude. So I'm going to come back to something you mentioned earlier on. Is you kind of the way I heard you talking is that you almost had this vision of where the company needed to be. A little bit going back to what you said about part of your role is to I guess, sort of proactively push the company to kind of expand beyond it, kind of like current thinking. How did you go about, so it's kind of a multi-part question here. How did you go about building that vision? And how did you go about getting buy-in from everywhere else in the company to kind of buy into that vision? Because that's something that we hear a lot about. I have this vision. I have this kind of North Star of where the business needs to be. It's usually one or two people in the business that have that. But to be successful, you need to bring everyone else on the journey. So how did you create that vision and validate it? And then how did you get people to buy into it? That would be really interesting to understand.
The important thing for me on the journey as if was we had to observe the business in its current state, what way it was operating. Allow the business to come to you and speak to you about here's the pain points, here's what we're really struggling with. And you'll find, and I think it's nearly right across any spectrum of business, it's generally all a supply chain, it's design development, it's getting labor, it's getting all of those things. So, you know, what you really have to look at and then to get the buy-in is, right, I understand the pain points that your business is hitting. And then you have to look at the technology and say, well, can I solve any of those pain points with this technology? And then if you research and find a piece of technology that you think can, the business can relate to and can manifest to actually being a viable product and a feasible product, then it's really, for me, get a proof of concept. Show the business, here's how this piece of technology can help you. And then really, at that point, you're looking, your stakeholders, as in your directors in each of the trading business, say, yes, I can see the benefits of this. I can take hold of this and help you implement this throughout our business. And it really is that stakeholder engagement. But the proof of concept being the way to push to get that done.
I heard you say that you kind of like spent some time observing the business. You created an environment where people could come to you with, Jude, this is the thing that's really a pain every day for me. These are the impacts. You use that almost like to build the vision. And then you ask yourself, can technology solve the problem? And you got to a proof of concept. So if that was a process that you went through, did you kind of just do that and then kind of spring it on senior leadership? Or did you start talking to senior leadership from the very get-go and sort of make them aware? Just understanding about that part of your process.
Now, from a senior leadership point of view, we communicate regularly. You know, we have monthly board meetings where we speak about, you know, different ideas that are floating around, and basically we all come together and agree this is the vision, this is what we want to get to. And then you're constantly trying to add building blocks in that are going to accommodate that vision and strengthen its position. You know, like as if I would often describe, the vision is way, way out. It's at the moon, let's call it there. So, and it's about taking a flight of stairs up to get to the next level, to get to the next level, to keep moving up. We're not going to jump overnight from here to the moon, but we're going to take step-by-step approach. Now, the one thing as we go along our journey, that integration piece, you need to see the moon so that as you're making your integrations on your steps, that you're leaving space to integrate with the next thing that you know is going to come along and be part of your solution. So you need the end vision and then go step by step till you get there. And ideally, you want to take the low-hanging fruit that has the best return on investment, because some of the bigger spans, if you like, are going to require some of the other tools in place to really reap the benefit of it.
I love that phrase, you know, you need to see the moon. And I think that could be so relevant to so many other people that we work with in terms of, some people call it a North Star, some people call it a moon, but whatever it is, it's first of all, do you have an idea of what it is? Can you see it? And then I would imagine having something tangible, a tangible vision like that, kind of makes it easier for you to kind of get buy-in from a broader group of people. Whereas if something's very vague and conceptual, I guess it potentially would be much harder to get people behind it.
Definitely. You have to sell the purpose of each piece of emerging technology and what it can do for you and how you get there. And the reason we strategically set off to use, you know, software vendors, basically your piece of software does this for us, it does this. We know already the moon's our ambition now, but when we get to the moon, we're heading on for Mars. You know what I mean? So that's what's going to happen. Technology is developing rapidly, as if, and the reality is, and one of the hardest things in when you get the proof of concept done and you're about to hit the button and go over something, somebody says, oh, I've seen this, and what about this? Because technology moves that quickly, you can be starstruck, and sometimes you just have to commit to say something out for an amount of time, knowing that the next best thing is coming as well. But, you know, if this is feasible and viable, get on with it, and then, you know, assess the feasibility of the next best thing.
I don't know if Elon Musk listens to this podcast. I'd love it if he did. But we've heard very clearly now that Jude's ambition is to go beyond the moon and get to Mars. So perhaps Elon's got a bit of competition there. So again, I'm loving the analogy. So as you think about the process you kind of went through there, Jude, that you just described to me, what we normally hear is along the journey, everyone's journey is different, but along the journey, unexpected objections show up. And the objections sometimes are like, you know, commercial objections or technical objections. There might be some real reasons why, you know, you have to pause or kind of change your plan. But the other big barrier that we hear about is sometimes people in the business just don't want to change. So I'm really interested in terms of, did you experience that within your work? Obviously mentioning no names. And if you did, what were the things that you did to kind of like help those people, you know, get on board?
Let's say, as a 1,000,000%, we encountered the people that did not want to change. You know, we're a contracting business right across, and our pride and our purpose, we deliver at all costs, no matter what. So our objective is, you know, if we want to deliver a good project to a high standard on time or before time, to hand over to our customer. But the reality is we pride ourselves on our delivery. That's our unique selling point, if you want, that we never fail to deliver. So you take some guys that are in the field trying to deliver these projects. They're comfortable knowing this is how I do this. And they can work within the constraints of that. They may not be the most efficient mechanisms for getting it done, but they will deliver, and that's what they're comfortable with. So the reputational risk that you take on board by bringing emerging technology in really startles people and makes them afraid. What if I can't deliver because I've done this? So it is a burning issue with us. Now, when we first adapted as if to trying to bring some technology and things in, we learned very quickly that you cannot do it in a business that is extremely busy and try to ask them to do it. So we recognized quite quickly that we needed to support that transition across with people not actively involved in the business or allow the business to up resources so that we could extract resources from the business to implement the change within. But it definitely 1,000,000% is difficult to change the culture of some people that want to just stick with what they know how to do.
Were there any things that you found were particularly helpful in terms of helping some of these people maybe change? You know, you talked about you decided you needed to support these people and sort of create this sort of like a cross-functional team. But were there any specific things that you did? You think, yeah, this is a really great way to help a kind of like a naysayer or a doubter kind of get on board. Do you have any examples like that you can share?
Go you right back to the beginning. As I spoke about, observe the business, interrogate the business, find out its pain points. So now you see those guys that are afraid of change, you'll find that those will be the guys that will tell you millions and millions of pain points. So now you, in your observation stage, have learned what really hurts for this guy. So you have to adapt how you sell this piece of emerging technology and how it's going to alleviate this pain and do it. So you really relate it to their problems and nearly say, you know, encourage them to understand, wow, this will work. This will make this pain disappear. And then you start to get engagement, and then you support that engagement and you push your change in with it. Now, what typically happens in the change environment as well, like if a guy's performance level, let's call it, is 100 for an easy number, that performance level may drop to 50 as they go through the growth curve of learning and adapting this technology. Now, you want that performance level to be 150 once they come out of that change pace. So, but it's understanding that we all have to have a bit more pain to get past the original pain. But once we come out the other side, that's that pain put to bed forever.
I'm getting a really strong sense of like a very collaborative process that you instigated inside the business. We've used the word, you know, you push the change through, force the change through, but I'm not getting any sense of senior leadership said, this is what we're going to do. You have to do it. It felt like much more, look, this is what we want to achieve. How can we work together to get that result? Would you say that describes the sort of the cultural environment at Rathbane Group?
If I describe it, you need your leadership to, you know, I'll give an example. You know, if somebody comes and complains about, oh, I'm doing this, and it's taking me twice as long to do my job as it was before, what you need your senior leadership to do is say, show me how you done that. So, and then if they say, wow, you're right, that is three times more, then I expect the senior leadership to come back to me and say, this is three times longer to do this. And at which point, I will likely agree, maybe it is three times longer, but you're saving 10 guys up chain in the sequence of what you're doing, 10 times the extra time that you're taking. You know, so it really is, you go to senior leadership, they must question and be change ambassadors if you want. You know, don't allow the, and I'm on a podcast, I'm trying to think of a word for bitching that isn't bitching to go on.
Okay, we can use that word, I think.
So your senior management have to put up with the bitching and really interrogate the bitching. And if they do that properly, the guys realise, you know, there's no point in me bitching here. I have to make this work and do with it. You know, so the senior management question and don't allow them just to fire complaints and pass whispers up the chain that this is rubbish, it isn't working. What they must do is question, show down, show leadership, and then our team that are building the chains in at the bottom support, you know, the end user and come up. And as long as the two are aligned in the direction you want to go, you will get success.
Okay. And so when I think about some of the other change management conversations I've had with other customers, you know, around digital, you seem to get two ends of the spectrum. You get one end of the spectrum where the change management process is highly structured and highly formalized, and maybe really, really, really large companies might favor that. And then you get the other end of the scale where you've got sort of like really small companies, maybe more like sort of startup type mentality, where it's almost completely unstructured and completely informalized. How formalized and structured was your kind of change management process? Was it just very conversational in nature? You just all said, this is what we're going to do? Or did you put things and systems in place to support the change management?
We used a couple of tools, like one-page management tool and everything, just to keep everybody informed what was going on. We set up, you know, daily stand-up meetings around different items on the agenda so that everybody could discuss and communicate openly at places. And then we would have had like a steering committee once a month where it was more at board level and saying, here's what's going on. But, you know, you really operate your change at the user level and you report up to the board. So it's important to get the audience right in each type of meeting you have and then really present the facts. And, you know, In your meetings, you're encouraging the guys to communicate and share their problems and things. And then when you're up at the board level, you're encouraging them. Don't make them question them. you know, what I always said, show me, don't allow them to, you know, just rhyme off 10 problems and walk away and they've gotten off the test that was 10. They know if they're coming to me with a problem, I want to know, show me the problem. What are you doing? And very quickly you resolve it. You know, is it because somebody down chain didn't do this? Somebody up chain needs this? So it always, from a management point of view, show me. That's what I would say to everybody.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was quite a very practical and agile approach you took.
Yeah.
So the specific transformation that you guys talked about was this sort of move from two-dimensional working in your environment to three-dimensional working. Could you talk about some of the impacts that's had on the business? What's changed and how has that impacted your business? Has it impacted your customers, your employees? What are the positive impacts you've seen from that digital transformation?
There's numerous to go through, as I felt. I'll take a use case back even to the proof of concept stage, where we basically took MGM Marine had a project which was an exact copy of a project that they'd done before. So we developed the build design of that within the 3D environment. We increased the machine intensity of how we processed all our panels and everything to build this retail environment. And we, with a very insignificant increase in the machining time, because all the panels and everything were on the machine, so it maybe added some extra details and everything, we reduced the assembly time by nearly 80% in that. So there's one use case where, you know, the adoption to 3D makes your machines do work harder, and because all your panels and everything, you know, you're talking seconds for it to add extra details to the assembly where it wasn't in before. You know, and so there's one piece to that. From a very manufacturing point of view, you know, it was a no-brainer. But then the other types of things where we were able to achieve is, you know, we were able to look at our processes. We were able to look, you know, in 3D, if I had done this type of operation, it's going to take this amount of time. So now we were building production capacity within the model as well. So we were able to look, here's a design that has come down. And because we're very much a bespoke manufacturer, everything we make is different. But we have standard processes that we run through. We were able to engage the model and produce, you know, here's how much time this is going to be in your machine center for to get out the other end. So now we're starting to understand our true costs, predict costs better and everything as well. So now you're relating back into your financial model on your cost control and everything we got. So, you know, we're on that journey of how do we push as much metadata into our model, because basically you build environments. So in building that environment, if we can relate all the information into the 3D model of that environment, then we can start to do lots more predictive things, you know, on-site logistics, on-site labor allowances, everything. But we are on a big journey now to push data to that 3D model. Now, we have challenges around data capture and everything and how we get the data back to these models, but those are things we're working on.
Some incredible, especially that first stat you shared with it, just a slight increase in machining time equates to something like an 80% reduction in assembly time. So a kind of follow on from that is like, what's been the impact of those kind of like, sounds like many successes on the team at Rathbane Group? What's the sort of like culture like now? Is it like, wow, you know, we got this like can-do attitude. Have you noticed a difference in how your people are responding to digital?
Yeah, and do you know what I'll even say, Dancy? You see our guys that are, you know, your CAD people, the ones that are creating these models and everything, they just enjoy going to work more.
Right.
Because, do you know, if I go back to the 2D environment, you're under pressure, I need to get this out, I need to move this, I need to do this. And they had a whole scheduling piece of their job and everything, which was in the 2D environment, wasn't able to automatically translate to your machine centers, everything. So they had a load of pulling out individual components and whatnot, and the pressure to move the job from design into production. You know, it often, it was left that detail wasn't in the design. You know, there was assumed, if you want, standards that if you brought it to this level, production would sort it out from here on. But that assumption, which production were great at and could do, left the inefficiencies in delivering the product. Whereas now these guys on the CAD environment, they're sitting and they are totally intense with the design and the detail. And they're getting close to taking the same amount of time as they were in the 2D environment, but they're producing an output that is much superior to what they had. And they say being afforded the time to put that detail in, they enjoy their work much better all the time. You see it. They've prayed in what they're doing because they know it's going down, it's going together well, it's not getting any kickbacks from production saying, you know, what's this? You've left me here, or what's up? You know, they're happy it's going. So, no, very positive.
That's fantastic to hear. And yeah, you know, as you were talking, you said the word that there's a sense of pride in what they do, there's a sense of perhaps a sense of purpose, but I guess you kind of feel like you're really in the business and effecting positive change when you're doing stuff like this as well. So that must feel amazing. What about the impact to your customers? Have you noticed a change in response from your customers since implementing this kind of like transformation?
You find more and more, you know, especially across the transition when they were getting some in 3D and some in 2D and whatnot, you know, the customer's going, oh, I really want it in the 3D. And now you get the customer asking, you know, it's much easier to see it in 3D and in visitor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do you know what? From a client side, because they can envisage it better, their decision making gets much faster. Because when you present it, oh, that's not really what I wanted. Whereas if it, in the 2D, you know, you maybe find yourself out and say delivering something and the customer walks in, that's not what I wanted. You're going with like, that's what was in the drone. But the reality is, you know, they just didn't envisage it out of the 2D still onto the what it would look like in real life. And you know, that decision making that the client's enabled to is incredible, just by the difference of two things. Because, you know, it must be said we go through an approval process before we go to build anything. So it really enables that.
Just brilliant to hear that. So I also know that you implemented a kind of a business systems team. Could you talk then a little bit about, you know, what is this business systems team? And I'm guessing it's kind of a result of these transformations that you've put in place. So tell us a bit about the business systems teams, and then tell us about what's next for you in terms of, do you have any thoughts about your next transformation?
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, we know where the moon is, and yep. We know the steps that we're on to take to get there. So I guess, like, on our business systems team, we began with it, mainly grew out of, you're quite right, a business systems ERP resource management platform that said, right, how do we implement this? And we grew this team. And then I guess these guys are in charge of, you know, we're not prepared to say, right, we've got that in, we're done. That's us for another 20 years before we do something again. The reality is, right, we have this core team of people that have a skill set. So they have, right, constantly observe the business. What's the pain points? What's the next project that's most commercially viable? And then we just turn the gaze and we move from project to project to project. And we step up the next flight, the next flight, the next flight. We're always going for the moon. Do you know what I mean? So that's that business systems team. You know, they were born out of ERP, they support ERP, there's still projects and everything ongoing constantly in that. I guess in our old system, we had plateaued it. We couldn't bring it any further. So once we went live with our ERP system as it is today, we had got ourselves to a position where we were on par, and I say on par, where we were better than where we were before, but now we're on a a system that really we can expand and grow, and it can grow with us. So there's always something, we needed to do this, we needed to do this. And then on the background now, they're looking at the metadata coming out of the 3D. How can they push demand in the system automatically? How can we do this? So it's that web of the different technologies that they work on, making them communicate to each other and speak, so that if I do a piece of work in this system, I don't have to go and lift the information from this one and set it in this one. They're constantly building that web of data flow going between different elements of software.
That really goes back to what you were talking about, your definition of a platform. It's kind of this integrated environment. So, you know, where something happens in one part of the business, you see the implications of it almost, you know, instantly or seamlessly everywhere else. So, yeah, it sounds like your business system team is kind of like the NASA or the astronauts. They're going to go back to your moon and Mars analogy, sort of like we're all mission control or something like that. So that's pretty exciting.
They're mission control, but a tough station. You know, there's lots of demand there and a lot of impatience.
Fantastic. What we also do on the podcast is we also like to get our guests to give a little bit of advice. So in a minute, I'm going to ask you if you had one bit of advice to anyone else out there who's thinking of implementing digital transformation, what it could be. But whilst you're maybe sort of reflecting on that, if you had to go back to the start of this whole process again, Jude, and do it all again, is there a learning that you've taken from the process that you would apply to, you know, to kind of yourself in the past? It was a bit sort of science fiction-y today on today's episode. We're talking about space travel. Now we're talking about time travel. But if you had to go back in time and give yourself one bit of advice about this is what I would do differently, what would it be and why?
The strongest piece of advice I would give anybody in this stratosphere is get the leadership buy-in right from the beginning, or they get the leadership ownership of it right from the beginning. You know, I've been through phases where they nearly would have thought you were a Lancaster bomber. You just flew by, dropped the bomb and flew off. Do you know what I mean? It really, they have to own it with you. Your change is disruptive. So, and you see, if your leadership don't want to have the change, then they're not prepared to put up with the disruptive. And then they're team aren't prepared to do the disruptive and it becomes really noisy. Make sure your leadership team have ownership with you, that they stand beside you, ready to go. And then, because it will be disruptive, there's no doubt about it. And there's an old saying, if it's not disruptive, it's probably not worth doing. But the reality is, it is disruptive and you have to have that ownership with the leadership with you. Otherwise, it's an uphill struggle from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that what you would do differently if you did have to do it again, just to spend more time getting leadership buy-in? Or is this something else you would do differently if you had to do the whole process again?
No, that's the key thing. And I guess that's lessons learned from some of the initial phases. Because I come out of a trading business and knew what was good and what could do, I maybe didn't go for that buy-in at the beginning because I already knew it. You know what I mean? So they look at it in that respect, but that if you want the moments change effectively, give them ownership and give them buy-in. Nearly encourage them to suggest, you know, this will work.
So while I really enjoy having these conversations, I think I'd probably say this on almost every episode, is that we are here on a podcast around digital transformation. I think we've mentioned technology just a couple of times, but the lion's share of the discussion has been about having a vision, getting your leadership buy-in, having a change management process, keeping it collaborative. And it's really, you know, it's about the people, the culture and the company. And so I hope that's kind of really kind of motivating to people that are listening to this episode. So in a minute, Jude, I'm going to ask you if you have a specific book or something you're listening to that you would recommend, like a strategy book or a book on transformation or something. Whilst you're thinking of that, what I'm going to try and do is kind of try and summarize what I think I've learned from our conversation today. And so I think that when we talk about digital transformation, it's really around having a vision of where you want to be. And you kind of articulated your vision is like this sort of platform kind of approach. It's really critical that you get leadership buy-in from the earliest stage possible. and you start building a roadmap. And you talked about, you know, we want to be at the moon, but the first thing is to go up the stairs to the rocket and then get in the rocket, whatever it is. So you build that roadmap. But to build a roadmap, you've got to observe the business. And it sounds like you've got to be open about the pain points that you see and sort of almost challenge them. Tell me why, show me, tell me why, show me. You kind of mentioned that quite a lot. And you use that to build the vision. And then ask yourself, okay, is this something technology could solve, or is it something else? Because sometimes people just jump into technology for technology's sake without having that vision and pain points. And then you move to a proof of concept. And what I heard you say was, to help overcome some of the challenges, you make the proof of concept as relevant as possible to the pain points that the people in your team told you about. And you make the whole process collaborative. And finally, once you kind of get off the ground, once you've reached escape velocity, it sounds like maybe you should create a bit of an A team to help further scale, which is a little bit like your new business systems team. So as you've heard me sort of reflect that back to you, would you say that sort of captures your journey, your key learnings? Or have I missed anything?
No, I think you've hit it on the head 100%. You couldn't summarize any better, I'd say. I would say the only thing that would need added to that then is that it's impossible to do without people, and that you have to bring them along with you and bring the culture. And I guess if I was to recommend a book for anybody to read that is challenged with this type of thing, it's How to Win Friends and Influence People. You'll find tips and techniques within that book that will help you bring the people along with you.
An old classic. I like it. I like it. Great. Thanks for that recommendation. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the podcast. Huge thanks, Jude, for being our guest today. I hope you've enjoyed the discussion.
Yeah, no, it's been great, that's it.
Okay, and to those of you that are listening, potentially including Elon Musk, we never know. As always, we hope there was some insight, some golden nugget, some kind of like bit of advice, something that Jude said that grabbed your attention and might motivate you to try the same sort of thing. And, you know, I guess what Jude would say is just don't waste time. Just kind of get on with it. Try it. Move forward with it. So thanks for listening. And we'll speak to you again on the next episode.